program is referred to as the Mike Molloy Show. We have a lot of stuff for you this evening. Oh, no, now the sound's screwed up. Gee, Kathy, what's going on? Is the sound okay? hold on just a second. I don't know what's going on here. Nothing is happening. There, now we got some. Now we got a little bit of volume on the webcam. The web jib. Hamana, and now the static's gone. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate it. Sorry for all the screw-ups. Remember, you're dealing with independent radio here, right? Even though we're on such huge networks like KPTK and Sirius and almost knocked over a beer can, and XM. Anyway, a lot of stuff tonight. We have some music for you. Earlier today, I got an email and a link to some music by a band calling itself right now Mars Arizona. And they're from the East Bay area of San Francisco. And I want to play for you a little bit later this evening something that they've just recently released it, entitled Jesus Ain't Coming Back. Also, I don't know how many of you will recognize the name Tule Kupferberg, but it was reported in the Times yesterday, his death. He was with the seminal beat band, the Fugs. Fug, F-U-G-S. And he died at age 86, I think on Monday. I think it was Monday, maybe over the weekend. And you have to be of a certain age to have even heard of the Fugs, and certainly of a certain age to be aware of who Tule Kupferberg was. And we're going to play a little bit of his music tonight, too. Well, the Fugs' music. Not much, just a little bit when we get to that part of the program. Dick Cheney's waiting for a heart transplant. Keep your children off the streets. That's all I can tell you. He announced, ta-da! There were trumpets blasting. There were timpanis being beat. He announced today that he has undergone surgery to install a small pump to help his heart work. As the 69-year-old mass killer enters a new phase of what he called the increasing congestive heart failure. Dancing won't work. I need to make another trip to Guantanamo. Maybe one of those young detainees down there will. Cheney released a statement. The operation went very well. I'm now recuperating to the point that I was able to eat lunch today. I had two small children and a dog. Apparently, the surgery took place last week in Fairfax, Virginia. He has had five heart attacks since age 37. This latest thing is called a LVAD, left ventricular assist device, and he says it will allow him to resume an active life. Now, that's the part that's scary. An active life to Dick Cheney is invading countries, ordering torture, making sure that lots of people die. What is it going to take with this guy? Man. Steve in Grapevine, Texas writes, we can only hope that Cheney's new heart pump was made in China. Oh, man. I'm entering a new phase of the disease and experiencing increasing congestive heart failure. I think it's all the blood that I've drunk over the years. All the human flesh. You know, if BP didn't have enough trouble, now there's this. The question is being raised as to whether or not BP traded the justice won by victims of the Pan Am Lockerbie bombing for profit. You know, 270 innocent people died with the bombing of the Pan American jetliner that was eventually traced back to in 1980. It eventually trace back come on, Mike, wake up. Abdel Basset al-Megrahi. He was the only man convicted. He was released and sent back to Libya as an act of, what was it called, compassion or whatever. He had 3 months to live. That was over a year ago. And the last time he was seen, he was playing polo someplace. Okay, not polo. But 3 months to live. Now it turns out, a question is being raised as to whether or not BP went to bat for this guy in exchange for drilling rights off in Libya. Megrahi is reportedly living in luxury in Libya. British authorities have already turned down a request to look into the matter. So we've got four U.S. senators. They're all Democrats. Lautenberg of New Jersey, Schumer of New York, Gillibrand of New York, and Menendez of New Jersey. They're asking Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to find out if this is true. And if the oil giant is now using that blood money to compensate Americans for the Gulf oil spill. I don't know. Are you surprised? Multiple reports surfaced since Megrahi was released as part of a prison swap that was proposed in 2007 that BP was negotiating to drill off the coast of Libya. BP got the deal after Megrahi got sent home to Heroes Welcome. You know, British Petroleum, BP, hello, it's a British company, and the British really, okay, you get the connection. The four U.S. senators wrote to Clinton in a request for the probe. They wrote, quote, evidence in the Deepwater Horizon disaster seems to suggest that BP would put profit ahead of people. Really? Its attention to safety was negligible, and it routinely underestimated the amount of oil gushing into the Gulf. The question we now have to answer is, was this corporation willing to trade justice in the murder of 270 innocent people for oil profits? Well, Senator Schumer and Senator Menendez and you other two guys, Lautenberg or, and a woman, Gillibrand, you're not serious. You're not serious. You wouldn't question whether or not a corporation, a capitalist murderous organization like BP, would trade the remains of 270 people, the killer who put it together apparently, for profits off the coast of Libya. You don't think BP would do that. The quicker answer is, why are you wasting your time thinking about it? If there's money to be made in a capitalist setup like this, are you kidding me? Do you think there is hesitation for 1 second? Has there ever been hesitation? Was there hesitation in the murder of hundreds of thousands of Central Americans, millions of Southeast Asians? I mean, let's not go down the list again, because I'm getting sick of it. But you senators are asking, whoa, wait a minute, is this blood money? No, you're kidding me. Well, oh my goodness, maybe we should investigate. Yeah, maybe you should. BP spokesman Mark Salt is already putting up a defense. I'm not even going to say what the defense is.
BP has long been involved in making sure that justice is served around the world.
Bastards. I swear, it never stops. And some of you brain dead teabaggers, and not you, to hell with you, you know, go away. But some people on the so-called liberal left wonder why I rant and rant and rant against capitalism, why I've called it anti-life, anti-family, pro-death, anti-earth. Are you kidding?
It's heaven for all these ideas. adios.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Andy in Seattle writes, Mike, as you know, I've gone way beyond the point of taking any of our political process seriously. And I just treat it like the freak show that it really is. Obviously, there's no way to change it. And obviously, most Americans aren't willing or able to put forward the effort to ever change it. So I just sit back and laugh myself silly at all the talking heads on television taking any of this seriously. But why? But about the teabagger who said those truly effed up things about the NAACP, I can only ask one thing. Why is anyone surprised by what was said? Seriously, I've heard people say they're shocked and what was said about the NAACP by these bagger freaks, and I keep wondering, what country have these people been living in? To all of you well-meaning, sweet people on the left, I have only one thing to tell you. Pull your collective heads out of your, you know, lower body regions. There was nothing shocking about what the teabaggers said about the NAACP. Hate is number one American and religious value. So spare us realists your shock and horror that such things were ever uttered in America, where some of you must really think you can still get ahead by hard work and honesty. It's time to smell the coffee and realize there are far more Mel Gibsons and Sarah Palins than there are Martin Luther King Jr.'s in our land. Andy in Seattle. Yeah, I was watching Oberman's program tonight, and some of the statements made by this teabag freak, it's just, look, the teabag movement is, the organizing principle is racism. That's the foundation of the teabag movement. And, it's a David Duke updated kind of group of racist white people who really don't want government to step in and end their freebies, all this free crap that they get, whether it's Medicare or guarantees that their money in the bank is going to be okay, or that their pension is going to be guaranteed by a pension board. No. What they want is to throw off the rolls all the black people and all the brown people. That's what they're interested in. The teabag organization's organizing principle is racism. It is a racist organization. It's the old pig on a lipstick thing. Yes, it's still a pig, but it's a little more presentable. They have taken racism, dressed it up, and you know, the few black people that are in this, you folks better wake up, because one of these days there's going to be a barbecue at some great big teabag convention, and it ain't going to be pork they'll be cooking. So if you are a person of color, you better get your ass away from these people. This is like a Jew hanging out with the brown shirts in Germany in 1931. What's wrong with you people? So, as usual, the crazy right in this country projects onto the organization they're trying to demonize their own racism. What did this white freak say on Oberman tonight? The bit of tape that Oberman had. The white freak is saying the NAACP is one of the most racist organizations in the history of the United States. I wonder if he understands that the NAACP was partly put together by white people. Probably not. So, I get lost. Every time one of these topics comes up, I just get totally lost. I don't know how to respond to these jackasses, and I don't understand why they get any kind of attention anywhere, even on this program. I guess the reason I do it is for the freak and geek factor, and I should ignore these bastards. But that's what people said about the Nazis in Germany in the 30s. Well, ignore them. They'll go away. I mean, this it's astonishing. Teabaggers. Just keep that in mind the next time you meet somebody who says they are a part of the, they don't call themselves, they call themselves a tea party, the tea party. No, a tea party is what 5 and 6 year old little girls have when they have a, you know, a play date or a sleepover. Molly has had several tea parties. These are tea baggers. Tea baggers are degenerate bastards that are brought together by a hatred of anything that is unlike them or scares them. And everything scares them. They're Negroes and immigrants. They're liberals and progressives. FDR is getting out of his grave. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before showtime, I got an email from Greg Patton in Florida, who is a columnist. And he writes, sorry to hit you with this so soon before the program, but I just found this. I'm looking into this further. Thus far, it seems the new cap is a failure. The new cap on the BP Gusher. And my guess is that the relief well will fail as well. Oh, well, that's nice news. Jesus, I could have gone all night without hearing that. I thought things were going swimmingly, so to speak, for BP with this new cap. But apparently not. And what he has for me here, Admiral Thad Allen just announced that the well integrity test has gotten a green light. For background on what this means, and there's a couple of links. And he goes on to say, as I noted yesterday, this is from George Washington, numeral2.blogspot.com. As I noted yesterday, BP suspended the Top Kill operation for 16 hours because, according to numerous experts, it was creating more damage to the well bore. And they stopped the operation without even telling the media, local officials, or the public that it had been delayed until long afterwards. Similarly, it took more than 5 hours for BP to publicly announce the delay of the well integrity test after the decision to delay was made. More importantly, oil industry expert Bob Kapner, who's been right about virtually everything so far, previously explained that there is damage in the oil well beneath the seafloor, and the BP has to let the oil spill keep on gushing to avoid further damage to the well bore until the well can be killed with relief wells. Kapner now says that he is worried that the well integrity test could further damage the well bore and could blow out the entire well. Recently retired Shell Oil President John Hoffmeister made a similar point today. today being today, I guess. Here's the quote. I think the fundamental issue is... there are serious concerns about the integrity of the casing that is the well itself, and that by putting the cap on and doing the stress tests, the integrity of the steel is insufficient to hold the pressure of the well. And if you lose the casing, the game is over. It's like having a volcano on the bottom of the sea. If you lose the casing and oil starts coming up on the outside of the casing, you can't stop it. There's nothing you can do that would stop it other than implode the well. There are many in the industry. Now, this is still a quote from retired Shell Oil president John Hoffmeister. There are many in the industry who feel the casing must have been damaged because of the power of that well, the pressure of that reservoir. And Hoffmeister, the recent retired Shell Oil president, stresses, let's not do the stress tests until we're ready to go with the relief wells. Better have relief wells up and operating before you run any of these tests. And as industry expert Rob Kavner points out today, the government and BP are fooling around instead of killing off this monster once and for all with the relief wells. You know, there was a point today when, you know, I'm watching CNN or somebody, and all of a sudden they had this thing on the bottom that says a bulletin or whatever, breaking news. Anyway, breaking news. The oil flow has stopped. And then CNN brought on their weather guy, who I like, who's done a pretty good job of explaining things so far, the meteorologist. Explaining that... And he had pictures, and he showed how the cap, the new cap that they'd put on, had in fact stopped the gusher of oil. And he said the oil coming out the sides, and he was pointing to it, he said those are the valves that eventually are going to be closed. He said, but it looks like they may have finally accomplished something. Well, according to everything that's coming in at this point from people who are not buying into the industry or the media hype, that's not the case. That's not the case. That's a shame. That's a shame. But it really, it was very, very, very weird to hear this stuff today, because I thought, oh my goodness, it's, they finally got a handle on this. Well, no, they don't. No, they don't at all. And if, you know, and everybody's been saying if the casing, whatever the hell that is, and don't email me. I don't even want to know what these terms are. I don't know. I don't want to know what a wellhead is. I don't know what a casing. I don't want to know what 16,000 feet beneath the floor of the sea really represents. I just don't want to know this stuff. You know, it's just like when you're a kid, you don't want to know about werewolves or vampires or things like Dick Cheney. You just don't want to know about that stuff. Because you know you have to get through the night, you know you have to do this, you have to do that, and there's enough monsters out there, right? Hey, yay, yay, yay. All right, I'm going to get away from that for a while. I just can't do it. I really can't. Can't talk about that stuff. I mean, Jesus, God. Let me get to Thule Kupferberg. He was a poet and a songwriter. He was mentioned in Ginsberg, Allen Ginsberg's. He was the inspiration for a character in Allen Ginsberg's poem Howl. and unless you have some kind of a working knowledge of the beats, some kind of a working knowledge of the Fugs, F-U-G-S. And you can certainly find their music on YouTube. You can also find Thule Kupferberg giving some readings. His last name is K-U-P, Kup, K-U-P, Fur, F-E-R, Berg, B-E-R-G. And in a couple of minutes here, we'll play a little bit of some of the Fugs music. And it's not a real good sampling. What I'm going to play for you is something that's we can play on the air because they were, you know, they could get kind of radical. The first album by the Fugs was entitled "The Village Fugs Sing Ballads of Contemporary Protest, Points of View, and General Dissatisfaction." That was the album title, and it was released in 1965. Kupferberg didn't join this band until 1964, and I think he was like 40 years old at the time. But the band became a staple of underground galleries and theaters, as well as anti-war rallies. And in concert, Mr. Kupferberg was often the group's mascot or harlequin, acting out satirical pantomimes, and sometimes not singing at all. On subsequent albums, after that first one, the band changed its lineup many times and acquired a more professional sound, although its scatological themes got it kicked off at least one major record label. Kupferberg, Thule also wrote, among his books were 1,001 Ways to Live Without Working. He was, for decades, a frequent sight in Lower Manhattan, selling his cartoons on the street and serving as a grandfather figure for future nonconformists. Have you got that queued up? Why don't you play some of it? This is Thule Kupferberg. He was born in 1923, grew up in the Lower East Side, became a jazz fan and leftist activist while still a teenager. So here is Thule Kupferberg and the Fugs. Texas. Basically, Rachel Maddow had on her program cardiac surgeon, who was talking about Cheney's surgery. They cut a hole in his heart to attach this thing, you know, and it looks like, I don't know, it looks like what's that tube or that pipe underneath your sink, that U-joint pipe, that's what it looks like, which is fitting. But the doctor pointed out that since this new device creates constant flow, Cheney will have no pulse from here on. And now everyone fill in your own punchline. As Mike writes, on a good note, this is the last stop for Cheney. No more procedures after this one. They're officially at technology's end. Let's just hope that one of the heart surgeons was a full-blown liberal. That is creepy. Cheney won't have a pulse because his heart valves will be closed all the time or opens all the time, and the opening and closing of the heart valves is what causes the pulse. But they will be closed, I guess, and this pipe will... Oh, my God, I find that a little bit hard to believe, but it certainly is welcome news, isn't it? I mean, oh, my God, no pulse. So let me get this right. If he, for example, if he faints at some right-wing dinner honoring Sarah Palin or something, and he faints, and a doctor rushes up and they take his pulse and there's none there... God, the possibilities of what could happen then are just, yeah, they could put the zappers on him and it would hit that plastic or that metal thing and just electrocute him. Wow, man. This is just getting way too bizarre. In a clear violation of the Establishment Clause, I got this from Gordon in Oklahoma City, the Indianapolis public school system has banned students from viewing websites of some religions, in addition to viewing websites put up by atheist or lesbian, gay, bi, transgendered sites. The Indianapolis public school system said the following, quote, sites that promote and provide information on religions such as Wicca, witchcraft or Satanism, occult practices, atheistic views, voodoo rituals, and other forms of mysticism, the use of spells, incantations, curses, and magic powers. This category includes sites which discuss or deal with paranormal or unexplained events. And Gordon writes, Mike, I don't know about you, but reading that, it seems that I missed out on the mystic rituals and voodoo ritual memo. Is there an atheist incantation cookbook making the rounds and I've been left out? Is it because in addition to being an infidel, I'm among the TW, as Harrison says, for that way? Also, didn't these crazy, I can't say that word, blank blanks, eliminate their own religious sites by putting this out? Clearly sites that promote and provide information about talking snakes, virgin births, walking, talking, living cadavers, and countless violations of physical laws qualify for, quote, paranormal or unexplained events, end quote. In closing, can I borrow your atheist cookbook? Gordon, Oklahoma City. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. If they're going to ban all that stuff, what about Moses parting of the Red Sea? Would that be considered an unexplained event? Because the Indianapolis School Board is banning websites that deal with unexplained events. What about Jesus' resurrection? this corpse, this walking Jewish corpse, wandering around, isn't that God turning the skin of Native Americans dark in the Book of Mormon? What about that? Huh? So the Book of Mormon is no longer available because, yeah, that's what God did, according to Joseph Smith or whoever it was that saw the angel Moroni. I guess it was Joseph Smith. And God is explaining to Joe, this is what I did, man. I made their skin black because I put a curse on, and the Negroes, oh my God, don't even get me started on them. And the angel appearing to Muhammad in the Quran. That all sounds pretty unexplained. Oh my God! I'm astonished. They also are banning. Let me see. Well, they're banning everything. The ban of the lesbian, gay, bi sites also says that sites can't, quote, cater to one's sexual orientation or gender identity, including, but not limited to, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered sites. Okay, since it's not limited to those, it would logically be including heterosexual sites as well, right? And sites promoting heterosexual marriage would have to be banned, according to the word here. So this document would end up banning a whole lot more than they bargained for. So any site that caters to one's sexual orientation. Well, what if you're heterosexual? That's an orientation. Oh, I see. No. Heterosexuality is not an orientation. Heterosexuality is a special gift from the cloud being. He reaches out and touches you, and you are heterosexual. If Satan reaches out and touches you, well, obviously you become gay, right? Indianapolis schools ban selected religions as well as atheist and lesbian gay sites from students' internet. Yes, indeed. Let's vote these bastards in and get the bloody work over with. We're going to have some music here from Mars, Arizona in just a second. I'm sitting here watching the weather guy again on CNN. Are you all watching this? You know, you are allowed to watch CNN while you're listening to this program. Oh, my God, look at that picture. They have begun the test procedure, and it's just scary as hell because now everybody is saying if they can't get the pressure up, and maintain it of around 6,000-8,000 pounds per square inch. If they get it up and then it falls precipitously, that means there is a blowout someplace else. And as CNN said, at that point, game over. You know, you might as well take your dollies and marbles and go home or start trying to suck it up some other way. I mean, this is just unbelievable. Turn on CNN if you've got cable and take a look at that. Unbelievable. Mars, Arizona. It is a Berkeley, California-based duo of Paul Knowles and Nicole Storto. And they called their debut album Love Songs from the Apocalypse. You'll see in a second their music combines elements of folk rock and country. And the lyrics hint at cataclysms, both global and personal, leavened with an ironic humor that kept things from being too grim. This comes from an article in, I think this is from East Bay Express, a newspaper in the San Francisco Bay Area. But anyway, Paul Knowles explains his apocalyptic visions are a natural outgrowth of his upbringing. This is what he said. Quote, my dad is from Lynchburg. I guess that's Virginia. Yeah, and grew up in the same Baptist church that Jerry Falwell attended. My grandparents sat next to Falwell in church every Sunday, and there was plenty of Bible reading at home, so those visions of judgment and catastrophe surrounded me. My dad eventually became a preacher, and I saw a lot of hypocrisy in my environment. Luckily, I was able to grow out of that. I eventually became unborn again, but it stuck with me. If you read what Jesus actually said in the Bible, you'd understand that's not what they're preaching. Songs like Jesus Ain't Coming Back are a reaction to my childhood, and that's what we're going to play for you. That sounds like my upbringing. Basically the same thing. Southern Baptist. Well, not my upbringing, but the influence from my grandmother, you know, and when the day arrives that you realize what liars these people are, what hypocrites. I mean, it's very hard to deal with, especially if you grow up where there's a lot of emphasis on religion. All right, I want to play this for you. You can find out more about this band, ReverbNation.com. Reverb, R-E-V-E-R-B, ReverbNation.com. All right, here's from Mars, Arizona. Jesus Ain't Coming Back. This is Wednesday night. That makes me want to go to prayer meeting someplace. I mean, really, on Wednesday night, that's what you do, go to prayer meeting, if you were brought up in that kind of religion. That's Mars, Arizona. Thanks, guys and gals. Paul Knowles and Nicole Storto. You can get all the information you want about them by going to ReverbNation.com or do a Google on Mars, Arizona. Mars, Arizona. I like that. Jesus ain't coming back that way. Now you know he's doing it, he and she are doing it tongue-in-cheek, right? But Paul, thanks for sending the music in. It was, I like it. It's very good. We're going to have to, I want to do that more often. You know? I want people to send me music. Now, I know a lot of people send in CDs, and some of it works real well, and some of it just, you know, it just doesn't work with the program. But every once in a while, you know, I get a piece like that, and I don't know how the sound quality was because of our equipment here. But to us here in the studio, all both of us, that was great. I love that. I love that. And it's not on CD. It was at the website, at the Reverb Nation website. So that's what we were playing for you. If you have music, I mean, send it. We'll take a look at it. I'm not guaranteeing that it'll get played, but maybe. And like they always say, we can't answer every request. We received, you know, it happens to me all the time. We received your email, Mr. Malloy. However, due to the volume, we can't, you know, okay. But if you want to send some music to this program, feel free. Especially if it's that kind of folk, rock, country, like what you just heard. I like that. All right, break here. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Maybe a break. Yeah, let's do that again. Hey. I do. I just want to just go to church. When we're finished with the show tonight, maybe we can find one of those snake handling churches. I need a tambourine.
People dress up to greet him every Sunday. Rags and sandals.
It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with you there, Madam Producer, about liberals, liberal being a good word. I'm, you know, changing my mind about that. Especially, I got this thing today from Sam Smith at ProgressiveReview.com. And Sam writes, progressives, as liberals did before Reagan, progressives emphasize doing the most for the most, which is how we got socioeconomic programs like Social Security, Medicare, minimum wage. Today's liberals favor expanding health insurance company profits over expanding Medicare. And today's liberals strongly support Democratic presidents who undermine the very programs that earlier liberals created, such as social welfare and Social Security. And then Sam goes on to say, progressives don't act like prudes and prigs. Progressives don't think the Commerce Clause of the Constitution should be used just because you feel like doing something, such as avoiding single-payer health insurance. There's a huge difference between using the Commerce Clause to guarantee human rights and using it to subsidize health insurance companies. Progressives recognize the Green Party and its members as part of a broad coalition. Most liberals act as though Greens were a new kind of HIV. Progressives try to convince people with whom they disagree, not just scold them. Well, see, that's where I fall completely apart, because I don't do that. Progressives oppose the wars in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iraq. Liberals like them as long as a Democratic president is running them. Progressives oppose the war on drugs, America's most masochistic and deadly battle since Vietnam. Liberals treat it with utter indifference. Progressives believe what people do is more important than how politely they talk about it. Progressives don't think you should have to go to grad school to have an important role in government. Progressives respect state and local government. Liberals often act like they're a Republican plot. Progressives understand the importance of the devolution of power to the lowest practical level. Progressives worry about locked doors. Liberals worry about glass ceilings, which is why liberals thought Obama's election would create a post-racial society. Too many liberals are infatuated with symbolism, such as electing a black president, while ignoring the real problems most minorities face, and everything from the job market to dealing with the law. Even progressives who don't own guns respect the right of others to do so. Besides, why piss them off the way liberals have done, when they could be allies on a host of other issues, beginning with civil liberties? But then, progressives still defend civil liberties. Liberals seem to have forgotten about them and ignore Obama's abuse of them. Progressives pursue issues, liberals support candidates. Progressives don't give up an issue just because the candidate they voted for is now in office and opposes it. Liberals love Clinton and Obama while despising the Bushes who preceded them. They don't seem to notice that our government continued to move to the right under both Democrats, and that neither repealed any significant policies of their GOP predecessors. Progressives don't think bailing out banks is an economic stimulus, but that helping to create jobs and stopping foreclosures is. Progressives support local public schools and their teachers. Liberals go along with the Bush-Obama attack on public education. Progressives are not afraid of criticizing Israel for its abusive treatment of Palestine. Liberals either support Israel's criminal actions or are afraid of being called anti-Semites, so they don't say anything. Progressives have new ideas. Liberals come up with new compromises with the right. And the last one, progressives believe that change is produced by broad coalitions brought together on specific issues, but not necessarily agreeing on all policy. Liberals believe change will come when everyone acts like they do. That's at progressivereview.com from Sam Smith, and I couldn't have put it better myself. I think that is... liberal may not be a bad word, Madam Producer, but it certainly has become ineffective. And I'm not saying because these right-wing crazy bastards in this country have made it an ineffective word. I'm saying it's become ineffective because so-called liberals have allowed it to be ineffective for the reasons that Sam Smith just wrote about here. We have a break coming up. When we come back... a missive from Prairie 2, and then we're going to take some phone calls. All right? We will open up the lines during this break. So if you want to chat, now's the time. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. 25 before the hour. All right, as promised, Prairie 2's missive from today. He writes, under the subject line, bootstraps. The 690 small banks that took bailout money are even worse off today than when they took the money, according to a report from the Congressional Oversight Panel, created to monitor TARP funds. This was the $700 billion financial bailout pushed through Congress by Bush under threat of martial law. Remember that? One in every seven small banks has failed to pay a quarterly dividend when due to the Treasury Department. They simply can't afford the payments, which will nearly double in 2013. The report says, quote, there's very little evidence to suggest that the bailouts led small banks to increase lending, end quote. Indeed, they can't find many commercial property borrowers who don't already have loans that are underwater by 50% or more. The report said, quote, but the bailouts costs are troubling because of small banks' crucial role in lending to small businesses and supporting economic recovery. That's according to the chair of the panel, Elizabeth Warren. She doesn't quite get it, that without a demand in the market for goods and services, there isn't any need for bank loans, and existing loans will fail. But trickle-down has been the law for 30 years now, so who can blame her? The report concludes that the biggest banks will get even bigger. A large number of bailed-out banks could collapse or consolidate because they can't afford their obligation to taxpayers. This would leave the handful of biggest banks with an even larger share of the banking system. In fact, the FDIC seizes banks every week, and most are sold in sweetheart deals to bigger banks. This, of course, makes the too-big-to-fail banks grow even bigger. The too-big-to-fail banks have done just fine paying back, quote-quote, their TARP money, since they have access to trillions of Federal Reserve money to fuel their proprietary trading operations and new accounting rules that value their assets in a manner that would make Enron executives blush. They're really just zombie banks that should be seized themselves, but that might lead to questions about them continuing to pay dividends to all the rich Republicans who hold their bonds, let alone the hundreds of billions in executive compensation and millions in campaign contributions, you know, the really important stuff that makes the economy go, the economy for bank executives and the politicians they own. The small banks in the Gulf states were only starting to recover from hurricane losses and now face huge potential losses from the BP disaster as the cascade of business failures sets in. Normally, disaster areas boom after a couple of years as federal money stimulates the local economy in classic Keynesian fashion. This didn't happen after Katrina. Conservatives say that locals will pull themselves up by their own bootstraps if the feds would just leave them alone. Bush did leave them alone by diverting most of the relief money to his rich cronies, and the local economies paid the price. No boots, no bootstraps. The $20 billion fund that Obama has secured for the BP disaster could have a real effect if distributed fast enough. The master of the fund says he will give everybody who can prove a loss 6 months worth of relief up front, and if the rules are liberal enough, this could work. The corporate media is now circulating the claim that if you take the money, then you can't sue, which is completely false. But if the money falls short of what is needed, it would just slow the death spiral of the economy for a short time, and as the other stimulus money runs out, things will start to collapse faster again. Tomorrow, Thursday, will bring some new job numbers, and they aren't likely to be good. PrairieNumeral2.com. Bootstraps. Yeah, where were the teabaggers and all these right-wing bastards when remember when Bush and Cheney came up with the idea of $700 billion financial bailout to Wall Street. And the threat was made that if Congress didn't approve it, then there would be unruliness in this country to a degree that would force Bush to declare martial law. Remember that? So the threat of martial law was what helped Bush get the $700 billion out in the first go-around. Remember? Where are all the conservatives about that? Where the conservatives usually are when one of their own is threatening martial law. They're doing nothing. They're shutting up. All right, let's do some phone calls. By the way, I have two open lines here, 877-996-2556. Tom is in Arizona. Hey, Tom. Hey, Tom. Oh, Tom hung up? Okay. All right, now we have three open lines, 877-996-2556. What else do we have here? Scott Galindez has this reader-supported news. Just when you thought Rush Limbaugh couldn't stoop any lower, he goes into the cesspool. I heard about this. I heard about this on Olbermann's program tonight. Scott writes, I'm an Oriole fan. I hate the Yankees with a passion, but when someone dies or has a tragic injury, I still can show compassion for them personally. I wish that baseball wasn't dominated by greed. When I learned yesterday that the owner of the team I loved to hate had died, I was sad, and I will take this opportunity to offer my condolences to his friends and family. What did Rush Limbaugh do within hours of his death? Called him a cracker who made many blacks millionaires. Now, Limbaugh's all over the place the past couple of days saying it was tongue-in-cheek. But we know it was race-baiting. He might have gotten a pass if this was the first tasteless racist statement, but we have a pattern established over decades of racial statements from this guy. For example, the statement that ended his brief stint with ESPN. Remember this one? Quote, the media has been very desirous that a black quarterback do well. They're interested in black coaches and black quarterbacks doing well. I think there's a little hope invested in Donovan McNabb, and he got a lot of credit for the performance of his team that he didn't really deserve. I'm not going to quote anymore. This guy makes me sick. But I had no idea that Limbaugh, because, you know, I'd rather listen to people slice each other's throats up than listen to this bastard. But I do remember when he said things like the NAACP should have riot rehearsal. They should get a liquor store and practice robberies. And he said, have you ever noticed how all composite pictures of wanted criminals resemble Jesse Jackson? And he told a listener one time, take that bone out of your nose and call me back. What a pig. What a bastard. I mean, all these people on the right, why is everybody act so surprised about the absolute, complete racism of these people? Oh well. Eight American soldiers and four British soldiers killed in Afghanistan in the last 48 hours. That bloodbath is just going to continue. I don't get that. Do you? Does anybody know why? Yeah. Of course not. Okay, phone calls. Bill is in Atlanta listening on XM.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm all right.
Hey, I was just calling to tell you that I did not vote for Obama, but the man is no leader. A bad policy with a good leader is better than what we have right now.
A bad policy?
Anything.
What do you mean?
A policy that I would disagree with.
Is better than no policy.
If we had a leader who would lead us down any path.
Well, who do you see on the horizon who would make a good leader, Bill?
You know, I'm not into, you know, who the next great star is going to be. I'm not saying, I don't care who it is. But like I said, I'll tell you up front, I'm not going to pretend that I voted, you know, that I'm telling you that I'm a Democrat or something. I'm not.
Well, no.
I disagree with his policy.
Wait a second. I'm not asking what your party affiliation is. I think anyone who is affiliated to a party these days is a damn fool. I'm not asking you that. What I'm asking you is, very simply, if you are qualified to make an assessment that Barack Obama is not a leader, tell me who you see on the horizon who would be. I don't care. Wait. I don't care if it's a Republican, a Democrat, a Green, a Progressive. Tell me who you see.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know who that person is, but I know the person that we elected as a country.
Well, okay, but...
Is not a good leader. And you can't argue with that, Mike. You can't tell me he's a good leader.
Well,
The proof is not in the pudding.
Wait a second. You're doing something that just irritates the hell out of me when somebody calls this program. I don't care what your political point of view is, unless you're an extreme right winger. But when you get involved in a radio call-in program, for heaven's sake, say your piece and then shut up while the host says his piece, and then he shuts up while you say.
Substance, no abuse.
It's 10 before the hour. Back to your calls. Aldous is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Aldous.
Good evening, Mike.
Hey.
I'm calling specifically about the discussion about the term liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And that you know, it's been, you know, greatly abused, and sure enough, those of us on the left have let it happen. I, for one, think it's really important that we reclaim that term. I personally make sure to be very loud and proud about the fact that I am liberal. In fact, I have fun with the negative associations people may have with the term and just tell people straight out that I'm the liberal their mother always warned them about.
But don't you think, because I'm beginning to think this way, if I haven't completely switched over, I just haven't given it a whole lot of thought. Don't you think that the word liberal has become inoperative because, first of all, because of the way it's been demonized, I grant you that, and I hate to give in to a bunch of clowns on the fascist right, but also because liberals have refused... let me narrow it down a bit. Rich liberals have refused to support anything that would give the progressive left or a liberal left point of view a toehold in media. I understand rich conservatives, and I hate them with a gusto and a passion, but rich liberals, I think should be put up against the wall sometimes because of their total lack of interest in furthering a progressive or liberal agenda. You know, you give a right winger an institution and a bunch of money, and he or she is going to do anything that they can to further destroy America to promote their own agenda. But wealthy liberals, they don't help with anything. They don't help with a damn thing. You know, don't forget, I'm an alumnus of Air America. I watched that company go down the pipes because there wasn't a decent liberal in America that would do anything to keep it alive. None of the rich liberals, none of them. Now, if that would have been Air right-wing America, put together by a bunch of neo-Nazis, like the Glenn Beck Show or the Limbaugh Show, it'd still be on the air.
Mike, I agree with you entirely that any liberal, rich, poor, or in between, that isn't willing to put up or, you know, should shut up, move out of the way, and stop calling themselves liberals. It's those of us who actually believe in what this cause means that needs to take back the term. The reason I think we need to, as you pointed out, okay, is it essentially at this point a dead term? Yeah. And what better point at which do you have to define something than when it's essentially, if you say it's been made meaningless, fine. We have a blank slate. Let's make sure we redefine it the right way and make sure it gets out there. And you know what? If all these other people who say, oh, well, I'm liberal, but they don't act on it, screw them.
Well, yeah, but...
I'm sorry if that's a little angry, but I am with you. I am really upset with the people who proclaim their affinity but don't do anything to support it.
Well, that's why I say it might be a better idea, at least it is becoming that way for me, to consider myself to be a progressive. First of all, I think the word is more aligned with what I believe in. I believe in progress. I believe in moving forward. I believe in moving away from this Neanderthal kind of attitude on the right. And liberal is just the word has been wasted by people who consider themselves to be liberal. So, I certainly would respect your wanting to continue to use that. But, man, I'm moving away from it completely because they just pissed me off too badly.
I got to say, though, maybe it's just how my brain works, but when I hear progressive, I just can't help but think of Progresso soup.
Of what?
Progresso soup.
Okay. Or how about the insurance? How about Progressive Insurance Company? Maybe.
Maybe them
too. All right. I got you. Thanks, Aldous.
You're welcome.
All right. Appreciate it. Progresso soup. No, I'm really down on the use of the word liberal to describe somebody whose political beliefs or political agenda are opposed to these. The baggers and the Republicans and right wingers, they are all involved in lies and deception, and deceit and dishonor, and cowardice and racism, and murder and mayhem. That's what the right is. It's a cult. It's a terrorist organization. And it should be totally eliminated from all human consciousness. But having said that, the opposing force on the so-called left, the liberal left, are just completely ineffective. They just don't care. They talk a good story. I hear liberals all day long talking a good story. But when the rubber meets the road... Oh, man, I got to go. Hey, listen, I'll check with you later. You know, I look at the various progressive or liberal websites. I have to call them progressive around the Internet that are just begging for money right now. And they're not going to get it. They're just not going to get it because liberals don't care if the outlets for their own point of view decay and die or die and decay. They don't care. If they cared, and don't write to me, please don't, and tell me you're liberal but you're unemployed and you can't do anything. I'm not talking about small individual contributions. I'm talking about the big liberal organizations or the liberal brain trusts in this country that could be doing something to fight back against this right-wing madness and won't do it. You know, I've been through this. I've watched this happen for 25 years, and frankly, I'm sick of it. So that's that. Story. We'll take more of your phone calls when we come back, okay? Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. What else we got here? One more thing. Then we're going back to your phone calls. Gordon in Oklahoma City again. Second thing we've had from him on tonight's program. He said, just in case you've not seen this by Glenn Greenwald, the following quote. Last week, the government charged Bradley Manning, the man who leaked video of American helicopter gunships opening fire on innocent people in Afghanistan. They charged him with crimes that add up to a potential 52 years in prison. Glenn Greenwald sums up the rules that govern the rule of law in America, where the powerful are never held responsible, but those who blow the whistle on them are always in danger. If you torture people or eavesdrop on Americans without the warrants required by the criminal law, you receive look-forward imperial immunity. If you shoot and kill unarmed rescuers of the wounded while occupying their country, and severely wound their unarmed children sitting in a van, or if you authorize that conduct, your actions are commended. If you help wreck the world economy with fraud and cause hundreds of millions of people untold suffering, you collect tens of millions of dollars in bonuses. And if you disclose to the world evidence of war crimes, government law-breaking, or serious corruption, or otherwise embarrass the United States, you will be swiftly prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law and face decades in prison. Well, that's how it works. Thanks, Gordon. That's how it works in a right-wing corporatist society. We live in a Mussolini style, the corporations rule type of system now. And yeah, whistleblowers, people who have the courage and the honesty and the decency to report on the evil that can be done by corporations, that can be done by government agents. The people who have the nerve to do that are being eliminated one at a time. And the people who are the criminals, the ones who do the criminal acts, are being rewarded one at a time. Oh, by the way, according to the Toronto Star, diesel fuel... Well, no, let me drop down a bit here. An oil spill near Montreal has caused a traffic jam on the St. Lawrence Seaway today. Officials say 9 ships were stuck in the seaway and 3 more have had to drop anchor in the port of Montreal. Officials say between 50 and 200 tons of oil have seeped into the water. And they're working to limit the environmental impact. The oil began gushing from the punctured fuel tank of a ship that had an accident Monday night. The ship, which belongs to Canada Steamship Lines, the family company of former Prime Minister Paul Martin, was carrying wheat. Officials say mechanical problems caused the ship to go aground. It sustained engine failure in the midst of a heavy storm. About 3 kilometers of shoreline were affected by the slick, and some 15 birds had been found covered in oil by the shore. The Coast Guard will determine when to reopen the waterway following Monday night's accident. It just never stops with oil, does it? It just never stops. And why should it? There's Tom. Hello, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I sure can.
Okay, great. I'm the guy. I sent you an email about Paul Alansky while you were on vacation. I don't know if you got it or not, but he was a political liberal activist in the 60s, and what would he say? It was the title of the article, and he's talking about, well, you know, you shouldn't talk about Obama.
Wait. You sent me an article by whom?
Paul, I don't know who it was by, but it was
Saul Alinsky?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, and he was a political activist in the 60s, and the article was talking about what would he say.
Right.
And he's talking about you shouldn't be talking about smack about Obama unless you got somebody who's going to do a better job, right? That's going to actually win an election. And so on and so forth. But so given that, okay, I want to tell you, I'm a liberal more than I am a progressive. And I know about Paul Alinsky. Okay? But the thing is, I want to stay on liberal ground. I'm tired of the progression where it's just given in to these people that just want to take and don't want to give.
Well, let me ask you something. See if you can give me an example where liberals, first of all, tell me who you consider to be a political liberal in this country.
Dennis Kucinich.
Tell me something that he has done recently that has an effective action against this tide of right-wing Nazism that's washing over the country.
You got me. Okay, because now.
All right. Well, let's move on.
You got me because it's just like you're talking about Bill. When Bill called up earlier, I thought he was an idiot.
Okay,
Well,
Who besides Dennis Kucinich would you consider to be a political liberal?
Gladstone, from Arizona, who's in my, I would say Grayson. I would say I don't think Tom Harkin, no.
Well, Grayson is a good example. He's a liberal, yes, except, and I've had him on this program, except where it comes to the issue of Israel. And then, all of a sudden, this American liberal becomes yet another American politician who does nothing but be an apologist for the Likud party, that insists that the reason the dirty
right.
Palestinians shoot rockets into southern Israel is because they have been tortured for 60 years and treated
correct.
Like animals, and now are being treated the same way the Jews were treated by
right.
the Germans, by the Nazis, I should say, in Germany in the 30s. So, but a progressive, you see, I'll tell you, progressive. A progressive point of view.
Hillary Clinton.
No, I don't. I don't think so. If you want a progressive, how about Cynthia McKinney? Now she's not in the office anymore, because the liberals refused to fight when an effort was made here in the 4th District of Georgia, 4th Congressional District, to toss her out. And as a result, they got a safe liberal in, a guy named Hank Johnson, who is about to be defeated. He's up for re-election. And I think he probably will be defeated. He's the one that said islands tip over, that if you have enough global warming and the water rises too high. He said this during congressional testimony. And then, of course, a few days later, he said, are you kidding? I was just making a joke. Maybe, maybe not.
Well,
but he's the one that replaced Cynthia McKinney. Cynthia McKinney is a progressive. So there's a big difference. But I hear what you're saying. If you want to be a liberal, Tom, that's fine. I mean, it's none of my business. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. I'm just saying from, I know, and for you people who are writing in, that it's not Paul Alinsky, it's Saul Alinsky. I know. And I think Tom is just not all that familiar with Saul Alinsky's writings. But anyway. Liberal Schmibral. We'll be right back.
Shops who used to sell their brooms and mops.
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
21 past the hour. Brian is in Manchester, New Hampshire. Hey, Brian. Hello, Brian. Let's put Brian on hold and see what happens. Gene is in San Francisco.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hey.
I'm a little nervous about talking about this political spectrum stuff because I'm not an expert.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, I've been trying to figure out a spectrum that makes sense to me from what I see going on.
Uh-huh.
And like I was telling Kathy, here in the United States, we call the neocons neocons.
Right. And
in Europe, though, they call them neoliberals. They acknowledge the fact that what we call neocons have a sense of entitlement for a liberality about their capitalism, this free market stuff. And, you know, we lose that when we try to conceptualize our political spectrum. And I don't think that's by mistake. I think our media controls a lot of the terms we use.
Well, you may be, and I offer this with all due respect, you may be confusing a political term with an economic term. In economics, neoliberalism has nothing to do, not directly, with liberal policies. In fact, it is the same as some of the policies, economic policies of the neoconservatives. What it simply means is that there should be no restrictions on the market. There should be no regulations. If the World Bank has to come in or the International Monetary Fund and bail out your left-wing economy, then what you have to do in order to pay them back is to stop your socialized medicine, stop your socialized public health, stop your socialized education. Neoliberal is a, unless I've got this completely wrong, which I hope I don't, because I've been saying this for a long time, neoliberalism is more of an economic term, less of a political term. So
what it does in our language is that it confuses the idea of what liberal is.
Well, it doesn't confuse me. I don't know how it's used in general usage. I mean, you don't hear that term that often.
Well, what I'm trying to point out is that, like, when I see when I conceptualize a political spectrum, it's like an energetic force. It's not just static position. At the far left end, I'll see progressiveness, you know, being progressive. At the far right, I'll see reactionary, you know, people willing to turn us back into slaves, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle, I see a status quo kind of situation, but I don't see it as a fulcrum point that represents any balance whatsoever, because the force in my concept of what the world should be like should pull to the progressive end,
mm-hmm.
rather than be pulled backwards to the reactionary direction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on either side of that status quo, what I see are people who are opportunists and liberal within those ideas. Liberal going back to the reactionary point of view, which I see that neoliberalism fitting in there, which is what the neocons sold. And then I see, even in our culture here in America, I see, and these are, I believe, the people that were so easily demonized by, I'm forgetting that guy's name who does all the different right-wing terminology and everything. But when he demonized the word liberal.
Glenn Beck?
Oh, well, this is much earlier than Glenn Beck. Maybe Gingrich or even the person
Newt Gingrich in his word list.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And so those people who even embrace progressive ideas, they're not afraid of that kind of change. And I just see them as opportunists. And I see the neocons as opportunists towards the reactionary end. So I see the word liberal being able to be used either way. And I don't see it as necessarily positive. They're just a kind of it's this kind of frame of mind, willing to use either direction to the a point of total freedom and let's make money or whatever.
Okay, well, I appreciate your point of view, Gene. Although I have to say, I feel like I just took a run through a vat of molasses. I thought I could understand what you were saying, but I can't, which is my fault, not yours. I think you made an honest effort to try to explain what you were saying, but it just, most of it just kind of blew past me. Maybe it's because it's 11:30 here in the East, and maybe it's just because I'm, you know, essentially not that bright when it comes to parsing down the terms, but I appreciate what you had to say. All right? Take care. All right, we have a break here. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The majority by their silence should pay for days like these. Right to build communities is back behind closed doors. Between government and people stands the right arm of the law. And shame upon the patriot, the mark of the bulldog breed.
Men, are you...
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Oh my, here's an email from Terry in Santa Monica regarding Cheney. Mike, the best part about the Cheney story is that the pump is battery operated. It hangs on a harness under his clothes and I guess is attached through an opening above his belly. The batteries only last for about 8 hours, though. At night, he has to be plugged in and recharged. Oops, was that a cord I tripped over? You people are evil. You're just evil. You know, poor mass killer like Dick Cheney is using all the bells and whistles he can to continue to suck air, and you people are making fun of him. Shame on you. Steve is in Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. Hope you and Kathy and Molly are well.
Thank you. Back at you.
Thank you. That's humorous about Cheney. I wish him all the good health that he deserves, which means we're like 10 years in arrears.
Yeah, well, I could say the same thing about Cheney. All the good health he deserves. If the cosmic hoo-ha takes into consideration all the death and destruction that this man has caused to innocent people over the past 40 years, he's only being kept alive as torture so that he suffers even more.
Yeah, and the very process that they're using to save him is probably, for most insurance companies, considered experimental. And
I would think,
corporate.
Yeah, I would think it would be experimental, but if your name is Dick Cheney,
yeah,
the United States of America, you're going to get, whatever you need. I would just, I would suggest that all mothers and fathers keep track of their children.
Yes.
For the next, until this guy kicks off this earthly coil, because, they'll be, and if you ride a, you folks who ride a motorcycle without a helmet, I wouldn't recommend that you do that right now, because they're going to be looking for a heart, brother.
Right. Yeah. Well, enough about that zombie.
Yeah. Okay.
regarding, Prey 2 and his insight, and doesn't he just scare the holy hell out of you?
Yeah, he does.
But he makes you think.
Right.
You kind of tease his emails, and then it's like, oh God, I gotta listen. I have to listen to him. I don't. Yeah, God, like I said, he scares you, but you gotta listen to it.
Right. And, well, he seems to know about the economic situation. Granted, a lot of what Prairie 2 writes is real, a lot of doom and gloom, but I think that's only because it's all true.
It's apparent, yes.
Yeah, and yeah. we're continuing though. There's some economic numbers. What's coming out tomorrow? Tomorrow's Thursday. Unemployment numbers or whatever. And it just keeps getting worse. You know, I don't care who in the Obama administration or what administration wants to say, well, all these jobs have been created. Okay, I'm not disputing. You know, the administration claim whatever they want. We've created 1 million jobs. Okay, but private industry has also lost 3 million. So what's the net effect?
Right.
You know, that's the point. And it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And again, I feel like, the solution was obvious from the get-go, and that was the solution that Roosevelt finally came to. It took Roosevelt a while to get to this. Maybe it's right. Taken Obama a while. That's the Works Project Administration. This country is desperately in need of billions, trillions of dollars worth of work and on the infrastructure. And it's good work, and it's honest work, and it benefits the entire country. And nobody's doing it. Nobody's doing it. So, yeah. You know,
people get paid and they go out and spend their money, what is it? It's like turns over like 6 times. You know, if they make a buck, then they go out and spend it and they get spent and re-spent, and it's like 6 or 7 bucks.
And when you consider the people right now who are just approaching a level of desperation that is going to be, is going to be absorbed and answered by the fringe right in this country, which is what always happens. I mean, when times are really, really, really bad, that's economically, that's when the right wingers come out of the woodwork and come out from under their rocks and start saying, well, here, I've got an answer for you. And then usually what happens is utter chaos and almost a breakdown of civilization. And we're on the verge of that. You know it. I know it. I mean, you don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing. I mean, we're there. So Prairie 2 stuff really is upsetting, but it's pretty much on the mark.
Yeah. And plus, I tend to agree with you more and more every evening. Let them have it. Let it fall. Let's rebuild it.
Every time I hear myself say that, I think, are you crazy? Are you out of your mind, yeah. Malloy, for advocating that?
But I think the true progressive is like someone caught in a flash flood, and they grab onto a root or a tree or a branch and hang on and let the flash flood run, let it recede, and then crawl up on the bank and, okay, let's see what we can do here.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense to me. All right.
Yeah. You take care.
All right, Steve. Thanks for checking in. Appreciate hearing from you. Take care. Brian is in Manchester, New Hampshire. Hey, Brian.
Hi. Sorry, my phone disconnected before. I'm sorry.
No. I think it was our mistake here. Don't worry about it.
Okay. And just I wanted to comment on what your last caller was speaking to. We've had 30 years of a massive flood ever since Ronald Reagan assumed his so-called elected office after the October surprise of 1980, and he assumed office in January 2001. Then in the 1980s, Alan Greenspan, the so-called libertarian, along with Reagan, made the highest tax increases in American history, the Social Security payroll tax increases. And that's what has the huge surpluses every year in Social Security that the Republican presidents, namely, like to steal from. But, you know, Mike, the last 3 years of the Clinton administration, the U.S. government from 1998, 99, and 2000 fiscal years, they ran budget surpluses where they did not have to touch a penny of the Social Security annual surplus amount.
Mm-hmm.
And Al Gore was all set up to run the lockbox. He wanted to have protection after that. He was a moral man, at least in that area, of protecting American workers' retirement. George W. Bush, of course, the December 12, 2000 decision put him into his unelected office. And he, of course, the Social Security lost another $3.1 to $3.7 trillion in its surplus amounts over those years. And the fact is, I don't trust handing back the power to these kind of people, Mike, to these kind of the social Darwinistic, Ayn Randian thieves. They're legalized thieves. The American workers' Social Security surpluses paid for Bush's wars and his rich tax cuts and the fact that 70% of corporations don't pay a penny of it federal income tax.
Right.
The American worker keeps paying for this, but we've got to stop.
Well, yeah, and how do we stop, Brian?
Well, we got a national boycott like you tried to do. I know October of last year we all tried to do it. But the fact is we also cannot, I just do not believe is now is not the time, especially November 2010, to pull a Clinton 1994 attack on Obama and just throw him under the bus. You know, how Newt Gingrich sees how they got power in that low turnout election November 94 and Newt Gingrich, their war in America continued and their phony impeachment process continued from there. And the fact is the Republicans with their so-called solution, they have like they have the nut cases like Palin and the Palinistas and Glenn Beck and the teabaggers, and also this mendacious phony constitutionalist Ron Paul, this libertarian, he refused to sign on to all 35 articles of impeachment by his fellow congressman Dennis Kucinich, the true patriot, against the Bush-Cheney criminal regime. This phony mendacious constitutionalist Ron Paul is not to be trusted either. He would have backed down on Afghanistan too if he were president right now. But the fact is, Obama promised to escalate the war in Afghanistan. He's not going back on his word. He pledged during a campaign he was going to build up the war in Afghanistan-Pakistan theater there.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, these people, the mendaciousness of the right-wing media gives so much attention to the teabaggers and to these people that are not even connected to the planet Earth. You know, the original Tea Partiers here up in nearby Boston here, they were against corporations. They were not slaves and lackeys for them the way they may well seize power no matter what Mike Malloy says about it or whatever this coming November, but they don't deserve it. The last 28 to 30 years, you know, like I say, like him or not, Obama, and his latest draconian Social Security Commission, I do not like, but if it had been the last 8 years under Al Gore's lockbox, then we would not have had the September 11th attack. Gore would have continued this hawkish Clinton policies against Al Qaeda. They would not have happened. September 11th will not have happened for the war profiteers as it did.
Well, you're making some good points, Brian. I've got to move on, though. So thanks a lot for checking in. I appreciate it. I've got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. I think it's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
It is 10 before the hour. Oh, my God. Here's a voice from the dim and murky past. Byron from Joplin, Missouri. My God.
How's it going, old bard?
It's going fine. When's the last time you called in? 1988?
It's been a while. I'm always out here, though. I listen every night, and, you know, I don't participate as much as I used to. I'm 58 years old, man, and I got a prostate the size of a watermelon.
Oh, my God.
So,
you want to lose that?
Yeah, well, you know, what can I say? First thing I wanted to...
It's good to hear from you, Byron. I haven't heard of you in a long time.
First thing I wanted to say, I don't want to bum everybody out, but I was really sad to hear of Marge's passing a few
weeks. Yeah, a couple weeks back. It was,
Really enjoyed listening to her.
Yep.
You know, I we've been beating this dead horse for 25 years that I've been listening to you, and I, you know, I'm just exhausted, and I'm getting
you and getting me old. You and me both, Byron. I mean, I don't know. I'm just let me ask you something. Where you see these new neocons and conservatives all over the place, they're just these just shiny, bright looking robots. These young college kids. Where are the liberals? Where are the new progressives? The young liberals or progressives. Where are they?
They're out there. My son knows a lot of them, but they're just not motivated like we were in the late 60s and, you know, middle 60s, late 60s, early 70s. They're just not motivated. It's just like you said with the rich liberals, you know, where are they? I mean, for crying out loud, man up or woman up as the case may be, you know, you know, what is the deal? You know, but I've always agreed with you 80-85% of the time. I mean, I think I'd be a fool to agree with you all the time.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
And, you know, but I think this week I'm gonna, it's probably pretty close to 90%. I mean, when you first came up with this idea about, well, just let them have the whole ball of wax and this stuff, just, you know, let it just go down the toilet. Let them, like Kathy said to me a while ago, just throw them the keys and let them drive. Say, here, you know, you drive. I agree with you. I think we just, you know, I'm tired of it. Just let them have the whole shoot.
The only fear that I have with that, and I think a lot of people who send me emails share that fear, you know, the Supreme Court gave the keys to Bush and Cheney, and they almost utterly brought down the country. There were no teabaggers. There was no Sarah Palin. There was no, you know, Newt Gingrich effectively had a stake put in his heart. Somehow, here's another one of these vampire bastards that have crawled out of their coffin. Here he is again. So, I do believe, in a real, kind of sick way that give them the keys. Let them see what they can do because they will drive it not into a ditch. What they'll do, Byron, is drive it into a brick wall at 80 miles an hour. And,
well, you know, you've got to admit that the Republicans have played this very smart. They have appointed younger people to the Supreme Court. It's going to be a long time before we can turn that around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just sitting here listening to you.
You know, it's just going to be a long time before we can turn that around. And I, you know, and they've played a smart game with this. And,
Well, a smart and evil game.
Give me a reason to vote. Not just a reason to vote Democratic, but just give me a reason to vote. I mean, you know, I voted for Clinton, and he let Reagan and all his criminals go free, no justice.
Right.
And I voted for Obama. I thought, well, you know, and I listened to Waxman. I was watching the day Waxman had the meeting downstairs, and Sensenbrenner turned the lights out on him. You know.
Oh yeah.
You know, you remember that?
And, oh
and,
sure.
You know, but here comes Obama, and where's the justice? Put some of these bastards in jail.
Really?
Why is so hard about that? Well, we don't want to make waves. Make waves? You know, Bush Dad had it for 4 years. Reagan had it for 8 years. Bush Jr. had it for 8 years. And then Obama, he's had it for a year and a half, and they're bitching at him because he hasn't fixed everything. What the hell's the matter with these people?
Isn't that incredible?
And they're already ready and standing on the sidelines wanting to give it right back to the Republicans after 2 years. I mean,
well, I think a harsh reality is Obama, even if he were inclined to, can't fix anything. We're on a downhill slide here, I believe, and I honestly believe this. I don't say this crap just to get people stirred up so they'll tune in the program. I honestly believe that we're on a downhill slide, and we've got a ways to go to hit bottom in order to start the climb back up. If that climb can even that's being awful optimistic in saying to start the climb back up. I don't know if we can ever ever have what you know our generation used to refer to as the American dream anymore. I mean, what is the American dream?
Yeah, what is it?
You know, we've got a dying empire. We have soldiers that are being blown to pieces every day now. Eight of them.
What's that about?
Eight of them, Byron. Eight of them in the last 48 hours. Eight Americans, four Brits, blown to pieces. They're dead. God knows how many forces were wounded. We're killing people in three countries now, four countries now. I mean, this is madness, pal. Byron, there's the news.
I didn't even think that when we got out of Vietnam that we would have to put up with this crap.
I know. I thought we'd learned our lesson, but we haven't. Byron, I gotta go, man. Thanks.
Hey, Kathy, Molly, have a good time.
I'll do it. Don't wait 8 years to call again, okay? All right. Take care, Byron. Take care. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.